I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories. Hi, my name is Anna, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a former midwife who left the system, and I'm now the proud founder of Sacred Birth International, a woman-owned company with a mission to revolutionize the birth world and bring focus to the sacred and the natural intelligence of the birth process. We do this by providing world-class education, courses, programs, and coaching to equip women with the knowledge and the tools to have conscious pregnancies, empowering and positive birth experiences, and the most nourishing start possible for themselves and their babies postpartum. We also educate and mentor aspiring birth workers into sacred space holders and physiological birth advocates in the Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship, the Beyond a Doula Training. If you'd like to work with me or take any of our courses, programs, or the mentorship, then head on over to sacredbirthinternational.com to find out more. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Maria. Maria is a mama of three from Sweden. She has a background in journalism and has written three books about pregnancy, birth, and the postpartum, as well as working as a doula and massage therapist. She's also the co-founder of Breda Organics with Christina that you heard from just a couple of weeks ago. And this year, she's also starting her journey to becoming a midwife. She's a force to be reckoned with in the birth world here in Sweden, and I am grateful to call her a friend. In today's episode, she shares about her three home births, her first being in the US, where she lived with her husband at the time, and her other two here in Sweden. All of her labors were long in their latent and early phase, and fast in their active phase. And all of them were perfect, just the way they were. Curious about Maria? Find her on Instagram as Maria Bengtsson Shah. Hi, Maria, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you today?
Hi, Anna. I'm great.
Beautiful. Beautiful to have you here.
So great to be here.
Fellow Swede. So today we're going to dive on into your three pregnancies and births and how you actually, you birthed, I don't know if you birthed all your babies or at least the first ones over in the US. And that's where you discovered home birthing, which is definitely not a huge like Swedish cultural thing, but it is more so maybe where you were in the US. So yeah. Going to be an interesting journey to hear about how you started your birthing journey over there and how you then came to Sweden. And I know you had a home birth here as well, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so beautiful. With no further ado, I'd love for you to take us back to becoming pregnant and your journey from that on.
Yeah. So I was living with my husband in San Francisco. He's American and we lived there together. And we had 3 years previously become pregnant, or we were pregnant, and it wasn't time. I mean, we had just met, and I wasn't prepared at all to become a parent yet. And I had so much more I wanted to do, and I was just about to start my journalism studies. So we decided to do an abortion. And I was really not either prepared for how hard that would be emotionally. So even though I was really confident that was the right thing to do for us, it was still really hard emotionally afterwards. And I think that planted a seed of us becoming parents together. And it was something we couldn't forget about. And it was very present in our relationship after that. And it was like our daughter was calling us already then. So when we became pregnant then, 3 years later, it felt like it was the same soul that was inside of me, actually. Mm. It was really, really present and strong for me.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's important to include when a woman has had, you know, an abortion or an early, you know, early birth or loss, however you want to talk about it. Because it's definitely, and I think, you know, we mentioned that before we started recording, like, should we mention this? Because I think it's so important. It's not ever, I think, for any woman, an easy decision. And, you know, you kind of mentioned that how our society is just like, oh, well, you know, if it's an oopsie daisy, you can just do an abortion. It's definitely not something that's just anything. It's a huge experience. It is physically, emotionally, spiritually, you know, a huge ordeal to go through. You do births, you know, even at that early stage, it's a birth. And
you do. And because no one really talks about it here, it felt really lonely to go through that process. I had no one to talk about. Mm. And my mom was just like, oh, you just do an abortion. It's just like that. And then no questions afterwards and no like healing process really with other people or with the support of other people. So I was pretty lonely with my husband. Fortunately, he was very supportive then. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
So you felt that your daughter Stella came back. She was the one that was there and she was the one that came through first when you did get pregnant again.
Yes. And I was certain that it was a girl and that it was Stella. So when I was 3 months pregnant and I was going to the doctor to do the first ultrasound, my mom called me up and she said, but you don't need to check what gender it is because we already know it's a girl, right? And I'm like, yeah, I know who she is, but it would still be fun to see her. And we were right. It was Stella waiting and growing inside of me.
And so when you did carry Stella, was there anything special around that pregnancy for you? How was the pregnancy for you?
It was really an amazing time, I think. I was studying, so I had a lot of free time, or time I should have been studying, but I had time for myself. I was working a little bit on the side, but I took the chance to kind of dive into my spiritual journey then. And that felt very natural to be in that place and needed. I felt it very strongly, like, this is something huge happening with me. I'm growing a new human being. And I wanted to do everything I could to be as prepared as possible, both physically and mentally and emotionally and also spiritually. So I wrote a lot and I read a lot. I read a lot of Eckhart Tolle's, accepting what is, and I think accepting, I didn't have a lot of difficulties like accepting the changes on my body, but just, you know, the fear coming up of knowing that you're going into like a territory that you have no idea about and that can be very mind as well.
Yeah.
And my intuition told me also to not do what everyone else are doing just because they're doing it. Like, you know, doing it my way was really important for me already in the beginning. So I was thinking a lot about how I wanted the postpartum time to be and how I wanted to be as a parent. And yeah, I'm very thankful that I had that time to just go inwards and try to listen to my intuition and see what was important for me.
I mean, that first time when you become pregnant and, you know, you take this big leap from maiden to mother, it is the huge, you know, the biggest time. Even, you know, of course, every time you're pregnant will be big, but that first is such a huge jump, isn't it? And I love that you had that deep inner knowing that you wanted to go there and you wanted to prepare, not just physically, but you say, you know, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and understood that deeply. I wish more women had that insight, you know, if they could potentially work less, if they could take the time to really connect with their baby, with themselves, with their own maiden, maybe even, you know, as you kind of touched upon, like feeling that grieving the maiden that is going to die, right? And the mother's going to be born, and what a beautiful thing to do. And I love working with women through this rite of passage the first time, really assisting this process of not just getting the right baby stuff or the pram or fixing the nursery or, you know, but actually looking within, doing ceremony, landing in this new person that is unfolding within you as your brain is changing and your whole,
you know, and how you just need to let your ego go, right? Yeah. In order to focus on the baby and the baby's needs. And I felt it so much in my I felt her so much in my body that I knew I needed to start doing it already during the pregnancy. So I think I laid the foundation, you know, to be as open as possible to her needs when she came out. And this is also something I'm passionate about, trying to communicate to the women that I'm working with, for sure.
Beautiful. All right, well, let's dive on into your birth story. Do you want to share with us, did you have any early signs of labor approaching for you?
Of labor? Of when the labor is starting, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, that can look different. So, you know, some women might have just an inkling something's coming. Some get really dreamy. Some get really nasty. Some just wake up with a bang and have a contraction from, you know, boom, get go, and just, you know, have a baby. So everyone's so different, right? And everything in between. So did you have any early signs for you?
Well, so this is soon 19 years ago. So I'm going to try to remember. But yeah, I remember that I started to go inward even more. Like I had the need to be alone. I had been like nesting for a while, tried to fix, you know, how I wanted things to look like in the room. And we were going to have a home birth. So it was a lot of preparation for that, just to make the house or the apartment feel as comfortable and cozy as possible.
Was there, because we didn't mention that, was that always obvious that you're going to have a home birth?
No, it was not. I mean, I had never heard any modern woman have a home birth before I became pregnant myself. I had only heard the stories of my grandma, how she was born at home in the northern Sweden. She and her 11 siblings were all born at home, or at least 9 of them actually were born at home. And her mom was completely alone in the middle of the, you know, snowstorm. She birthed my grandma without support other than the other siblings, you know, who had to help with the practical stuff to kind of get hot water and stuff like that. But she just like pulled up her skirt and birthed there on the cold wood floor, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
So that had always blown my mind away thinking about that. But then it was something I hadn't heard anyone else talk about. Luckily, I found a little article in a pregnancy magazine in Sweden, actually, where at that time, no one talked about home births. No one wrote about home births. But it was this little article by a woman who had also, she also lived in northern Sweden, and she had decided to give birth by herself, not even with her husband supporting her. And she had like waved goodbye to her husband, set up cameras in the house to film it, and then birthed all alone, and, you know, had prepared like the scissors and the hot water and everything. And I was like, wow, if she can do this, why shouldn't I be able to? And I thought it was so, I don't know, it was so cool that she did her own thing. So it made me, you know, think about how do I even want it to be, instead of just doing what everyone else are doing. I started thinking about how do I want it to be, like what would feel right for me. But then, so this was, I was on vacation in Sweden during the summer when we got pregnant. And then when I came back, we had an appointment scheduled with an OBGYN, which is a doctor. And in the US, it's either like you have a home birth or you're at a midwifery-led center, or you give birth at a hospital. And the OBGYN, then you have a doctor who like sees you through pregnancy and then birth. Anyways, I met with my OBGYN at the Central Hospital in San Francisco City. Me and my husband went there and she took all the tests that you have to take, and it was very medical and it smelled like super like disinfectant, and it was so, you know, not very friendly environment. And then she thought she was some kind of like comedian, this doctor. So when I asked her, because I had already done some research, since I'm curious and I wanted to know everything, I had already done a lot of research. I knew that it would be better for me and the baby if I didn't have the epidural and if I moved around during labor. So I asked her, like, what's your view on this? Are you open for me to like try it without an epidural and try to move around and let my body do its thing? And she was like, oh my God, you're just gonna like end up on the bed and scream for an epidural like everyone else. And she was like kind of laughing me in the face. And I felt like, no, you're never gonna get anywhere close to my body. And I'm never gonna, you know, set my foot in this hospital again. Like, it was so strong for me. It was like this animal, like, you know, wanting to protect me and my baby. No. So I went home and I started looking for midwives. And since I was living in San Francisco, there were a few to choose between. And I found a group of midwives called Circle of Life. And they were in a purple house, like super comfy and cozy in their space. And they took, you know, like an hour and a half every time we saw them, talking about like everything from fear to, you know, how we were preparing with other things and how our relationship was and about sex now and after the baby was coming, and like, you know, really took their time. We were both feeling so safe and protected and loved. It was such a loving, you know, environment. And it was definitely like contagious, you know. I felt like my husband was inspired by how they were treating me as well.
Yeah.
And it was like they helped to like set up, you know, some kind of like a platform for us to also know what to talk about, you know.
Yeah, it, beautiful.
It, good communication around the birth, at least. So
that. Oh, yeah. That's true midwifery. Love that.
Yeah.
All right, back to the birth story then.
Yeah. So what I should tell you too is that I did go to another Marine General, which is a smaller hospital where we live, closer to where we lived in Sausalito, in case of an emergency transfer. I had to be registered there as well. So I saw the midwives there like once a month. And they had told me that because I had had like a colonization of my cervix, I had like a cell changes at some point earlier when I was younger. And they told me that that could make labor much longer and harder. So it was like a psychological thing that I had to deal with later during the birth. So anyways, I just wanted to.
It's so interesting, you know. Because you want women, of course, to know things, but it's also that delicate thing about what you also share could end up being something that is in your head for labor and birth or actually affects your process, because the mind is so strong.
I know. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting you say that. I'm curious to hear how that went for you.
This episode is sponsored by Breda Organics, a natural, sustainable, and high ethics woman-owned company that I am obsessed about and use all their amazing oils, sprays, and herbal blends on myself and my clients. Midwives and birth workers have traditionally used herbs to support women's health and well-being during pregnancy, birth, and the postpartum. And in Breda Organics' amazing collection of products, you find all you would ever want for your pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, as well as in your birth toolkit as a birth worker. Let me share with you my favorites. I love their organic body and massage oils. The purity of these oils are amazing, and they have an oil that helps you open up in labor called Open Up. And let me tell you, it's intoxicating. Oh, it's so amazing. And they also have an oil called Into the Deep that I really love, that can be used in transition to deeply connect the woman to surrender to the power of contractions and dive into trust when she might be spiraling. I also love their roller mother blessing, which I use in my mama ceremonies together with their herbal teas, yoni steaming herbal blend, and scented candles. And finally, their intimate oil Pure Bliss for the perineum is perfect for perineal massage in preparing the body for birth, as well as during the birth itself. If you're curious about these pure organic high vibe products, then head on over to bredoorganics.com and use the coupon code SACRED for 20% off. That is 20% off with the coupon code SACRED. So yeah, let's dive on into the birth story now, shall we?
Yeah. Yes. So I was pacing up and down along the water in Sausalito when the contractions started, and they were starting during the night, of course, like at 3-4 in the morning, when, as is usual, I think, because that's when our oxytocin levels are as highest during the night. So they had started clocking them pretty early to see if it was the real thing. And they kept going. And I tried to walk outside. Meanwhile, I think we're calling our midwives around 10 in the morning or something. And she came midday. When she came the first time, I was only like half a centimeter dilated. And I knew I had to go to 10 before being able to push. So it was a while left. And she encouraged me to try to relax as much as possible and maybe even have a glass of wine, which I didn't drink because I had read that it was so bad for the baby, you know, to drink alcohol during pregnancy. But now I can see that it would be much better to drink a little glass of wine instead of having to, you know, force the labor to start with something more stronger synthetic medication, if that would have been necessary, but it wasn't later. But just a little side note. And then, yeah, we were just like having a fantastic time. My husband and I, we were making it the moment into something really like sensual and pleasurable. We were kissing a lot, and I was moving around, sitting on the Pilates ball, like, you know, moving my hips. We were even making love during contractions. It was pretty crazy that I felt like doing that, all that stuff. But it was just like we were having fun, playing like, you know, animals kind of thing. Yeah, and they kept coming, but it didn't feel like they were accelerating in intensity, really. But they were still strong enough that I had to stop and breathe and, you know, do my thing during the contractions. And when she came again, the midwife, in the evening, I had only opened like a centimeter more. Mm. So it was like a centimeter and a half after 24 hours or more.
Mm. And during those 24 hours, how regular were your contractions?
They were regular. They came regularly, and they were intense. I mean, they would become more intense, but not that much more intense. This has happened to me during all three births that I have long, you know, latence fos, labor.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then at the end, it sounds really fast.
Yeah, sounds like prodromal labor. So, so when you say regular, do you mean like once every 10 minutes, or do you mean every 7 minutes?
Like three in 10 minutes.
Yeah, right. So that is intense to cope with for sure.
Yeah, that was intense. Time.
Yeah.
So I kept having those kind of contractions for about 40 hours.
Without a break.
Yeah.
How did you cope with that? How did you move with them? Could you,
I think it really
rest in bed during the nights, trying to get some sleep?
Yeah, that last night I slept between the contractions, and then my body woke me up to kind of handle the contraction. But I was so tired at that time that I fell asleep in between, definitely. But I think it helped that we were boosting the oxytocin so much that I was kind of like in this high at all times also. So it wasn't until, you know, she came back and she was like, you're still a centimeter and a half that next day. I said that she came in the evening. That's not true. She came the next day. So
take us back. So mm-hmm. you started in the middle of the night. She yeah. comes around lunchtime. By yeah. then, you're about a centimeter. She leaves because she recognizes you're in early labor, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
So she leaves and then she doesn't come back until the next morning.
Yeah. No, okay. Not even morning, afternoon.
Right.
Yeah.
So
4, 5, something like that.
So during this time, were you in contact with her or did you feel yourself that, oh, I'm still in early labor?
She was listening to my breathing and she was asking my ex-husband how I was doing. So I think she was confident that it was okay for her to stay away for a little bit. And it was good for us to have that time because I think it would have been really hard for me to have her observe me and kind of like I would have felt stressed that something needed to happen. And that also I'm very, very sensitive for, you know, outside stimulation or for others like expectations and, you know, to be there for everyone else is my like natural state of being. So when she came back, it kind of like got quieter, the yeah. contractions again. And I had to, you know, she had to do her own thing in the living room. Meanwhile, I was in the bedroom until they started picking up again. But then after a few hours, I started feeling a little panicky inside. Like, what if this just keeps going like this? And I'm getting pretty tired and starting to feel a little panic. Like, what happens if? And I communicated that with her. And she said, well, if you get too tired, then maybe we have to go to the hospital so you can get an epidural and sleep and get a break. But then, you know, I knew that that could mean that I would get a C-section, and a surgery was something I really, really wanted to avoid. So actually she broke my amniotic sac because it was like, this was, you know, 19 years ago. And I don't think midwives likes to do this anymore, but.
Oh, it depends on the midwife for sure.
Maybe it depends on the situation as well, but it definitely felt like they were strong. They were intense. But the sac was so strong and the head wasn't like pushing down on my cervix enough, kind of. So I wasn't dilating maybe in the same pace as my body wanted to work. It felt like something was like, anyway. So when she said, I can do this, and then it might get really a lot more intense, or you can keep going like this and see what happens. And I just felt like it can't get more intense and I'm ready, you know, to face whatever comes. So I asked her to break it, actually. And then I went to the bathroom and I took a few contractions there. And that's when everything shifted because I was like, I'm going to not try to, you know, stray away from this. I'm not going to try to go like circles around it. I need to just face this. I need to face my fears. Mm-hmm. I need to dive into this force inside of me and just let it like, you know, just let it flow inside of me and welcome this and surrender to it. So when I came out from the bathroom, my husband told me afterwards, it was like, you had changed to a different person.
Right.
I was transitioning spiritually as well.
Yeah.
And I, from then on, I was just like, you know, meeting the contractions, surrendering to them, getting really like heavy and just like saying yes to this strong, strong force that can feel really scary if you don't have that mind shift or mindset that I can't escape this. I need to just dive into this.
I guess, you know, the alternative was, and you were faced with that, like you can go on like this or you can commit to it and have a baby, because exactly. this is again like the power of our mind, right?
Yes.
And you can have strong contractions, but if you can internally resist it, you can mm-hmm. externally do the moaning, the sounding, you can do all the right things in quotation yes. marks, yeah. but internally you're holding your cervix shut and you're mm-hmm. like you're afraid to really meet the power and you're holding yeah. back. Can you see that you did that? Is that obvious?
Oh, yeah. Now? Oh, absolutely. And I think part of it was because I remembered what that midwife said, that hospital has told me that you are going to have a hard, long, difficult labor. And then
I believed her.
And I believed her. So I was really stuck with that thought and that belief.
And so you created that.
And then after, when I really decided that I'm doing this now, I'm going to see my baby here at home and I'm going to see her now. I just let go of all that fear. Mm. And then it went really fast after that. So I got in the pool, even though I was still just open, like maybe 3 centimeters or something.
Well, you thought you were because she broke your waters and then you don't know what happens.
No, but actually she checked me after like an hour and a half, I think. Mm-hmm. And we have filmed this, so I have been able to go back and look at the timings of things. So, but yeah, for like an hour and a half, then I was still like 5 centimeters open only. And she thought, she called her colleague who was on, you know, to ask for assistance because she felt like this is still going really slow. Can you come to help me out? But then after that, Joan, the other midwife, came to support Leopi, the first midwife. And after that, it was like half an hour until she was out. Mm-hmm. And I have on film like, okay, sorry, she's not going to give birth on the 5th like she thought. It's probably going to be the 6th. It was like 11 at night now. I was in the pool and I was only 5 centimeters open. But then something happened quickly here where I was just like, you know, I was just so I was so present. Everything was so present. But yet it was like as if I was like one with the universe. It sounds crazy, but it was like I was high. I was somewhere, like I was there and everything and everywhere at the same time. And with my baby, it was a really amazing feeling. It was definitely ecstatic by then. And super, super intense.
Yeah. And this is the thing that one of the, I would say, good things about having a long labor is that oxytocin builds. It builds in strength, right? It's a pulsating, you know, hormone that's like building and building and building and building and building. And as that is building, and as also when you have a longer labor, you know, the intensity and also then maybe experience of pain or you know, that sensation that also releases beta endorphins, and the beta endorphins and the oxytocin together, that is what creates that altered state of consciousness that you then sounds like you're experiencing in the story. And and you need that build up for that to really happen. Like if you have a really quick labor, it's not building in your body, right, to have that. And so this really transcendent and spiritual, all the state of consciousness, you're traveling to the stars and the underworld and all that. You know, you need the buildup of both of these hormones in your body for that to actually
unfold. Yeah. No, I'm thankful that I had a long labor because of that experience. And I know before the birth, during pregnancy, when I was reading about labor, and I thought, oh my God, 12 hours sounds like so long to be in pain. And this was like, now it had been like 42 hours and I was like, just in my, you know, most amazing state ever. I would never have known that it could be like that. I did read The Spiritual Midwife, though, by Ina May Gaskin, and I knew something like this could happen, but yeah, it was extraordinary. Anyway, so then when the pushing urges started, from then on until she was born, it was just like 15 minutes. So she was actually born on the 5th, like I had predicted for months. It was really funny and everyone were laughing. Yeah, it was fast, but she still did some, you know, gliding in and out. So my tissue could stretch and, you know, and have it be gentle on my vagina. So I didn't have to, you know, be tearing so much. So, and I loved pushing. I loved it. It was like, yes, I could just use all my force now. And I was standing in the pool on my knees with my hands on my husband's thighs. He was also in the pool in front of me. And I had told him where to stand and where to do, what to do. I was like, you're there. I'm going to do this. I felt exactly what I needed and what the baby needed. It was just to go back just a few minutes is when the midwife still thought I was 5 centimeters open. She was like, maybe you should put on some clothes and go up and down the stairs in the in the building. And she had no idea that it was going this fast. So I was like, okay, I'll try. And I get my clothes on and I was like, trying to go down. And then I was like, no way, I need to get back into that pool because it was such amazing pain relief to be in the pool. So now, anyways, we're back there and that's where the urges starts pretty much right away after. And it was just, I just let that like primal animal in me do its thing. And I was bearing down, I was letting scream and get just doing the sounds I needed to do in order for her to come out. And I was saying yes. And my husband, he was, you know, reminding me, you know, and everyone was so loving. They were all like, you're doing amazing work and this is perfect. And, you know, you're doing so beautifully. And I mean, it was just like exactly what I needed to hear too, because I was a little worried in the beginning, like, how should I breathe? And can I just, you know, go with it or what should I do? And sometimes when you have read a lot, it's like, you don't know, you know, which state am I in now or which stage? What should I do now? You know, you become a little too much in your head. So it was good that they were, you know, just like encouraging me and showing me that it was the right thing to do, what I was doing. Mm. And we were kissing in between and kind of laughing a little bit and then focusing like 100% when the next urge came. And then she was born. She was born and she came, the midwife pushed, she came out. So I was standing on my knees and she was coming in between my legs and the midwives gave her a little push to let my husband, you know, take her from the water and bring her up to me. Mm. And she, yeah. And it was amazing. And at some point, when she was coming out, I was feeling her and the midwife was encouraging me to touch her head. And I was like, oh my God, it's a baby after all. You know, it like feels so unreal that you're actually giving birth to a new human being. And we got a good laugh then. And I think that was also helping the, you know, contractions or the whole process. Anyway, so she was coming up. She wasn't screaming right away. She had a little water in her mouth and then screaming and everyone were happy and we're crying and kissing and sitting there for a while, I think for like 40 minutes until we got up from the water. Mm-hmm. And the midwives thought I was bleeding a little too much. So they actually gave me an oxytocin shot. Mm-hmm. And told me to stop bleeding. So I was like, okay, I'll stop bleeding. And they were also, they had some homeopathic stuff, but I don't know if they had time to use it. I was bleeding kind of, yeah, a lot. And then it stopped. It was fine. And it took like an hour before the placenta came out. Mm. I mean, before they never cut it, of course. It was, you got to pulsate all the blood, all the stem cells, all the oxygen to my daughter. Mm-hmm. And she had a great tone pretty fast. And then we just, you know, walked to the bedroom a few steps away. And
that's lovely. I have a question though. So, so straight after birth, they gave you a synthetic oxytocin, but they didn't cut the cord to your baby.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So just for anyone listening, like...
I'm not sure, actually. Maybe the placenta came out. No, the placenta came out first. Sorry.
Okay.
I was on the birthing stool.
I was like, this does not sound okay.
No, sorry. Yeah, I came out. It was like 40, 50 minutes later or maybe even an hour.
Yeah, right.
I sat on the birthing stool and the placenta came out.
And that's when you were bleeding a bit.
Yeah, they thought.
Oh, okay.
They were nervous. Sense. They could have, I mean, now I know you can also try some homeopathic stuff or some other stuff. You can try to have the baby suck already and stuff like that. But
yeah. Didn't know that then. You were just a mama. Of course, yeah. But you know now because I know you're a doula. But yes. So anyone listening, the reason I reacted is that so if you get it's a strong dose that's given into the leg of synthetic oxytocin. If a woman does bleed extensively and is looking symptomatic, like she's, you know, this is too much for you to handle, right? Then it's great. I mean, that's the beauty of having a home birth midwife, that she does carry a kit that's there in case of. And I mean, that's a great thing, right? But you definitely have to cut the cord, or of course the placenta needs to be birthed. Otherwise, that would go through to the baby.
So we definitely
that's why I reacted. It's like, that doesn't sound right. So obviously that was
and also the uterus starts closing with a placenta inside. That would be really
It's given when you give synthetic oxytocin, you also then, if you have the placenta inside, what it does, it creates contractions, and then you also help the placenta out with a controlled cord traction so that it does come out in the next few minutes or something, you know, around the time you give the oxytocin. So you definitely don't want to give oxytocin and not birth the placenta. That goes hand in hand if you you the placenta is still inside. But it sounds like you birthed your baby, you had wonderful skin to skin and a golden kind of hour, and then you birthed the placenta, and then you had a bit of a bleed that they then thought was too much.
I think she had already started sucking on the breast, actually.
Yeah, beautiful. So,
yeah,
that's the thing, though. You know, you can have a bit of a gush when the placenta comes, and that is one of the things that midwives fears the most. So sometimes it is right to act, and sometimes it might have been just a knee jerk reaction that you know, it's instead of saying, was it just that gush? Is she fine now? How is she holistically coping? Because you know, it's you can see on a woman if she's really affected by blood loss or not as well, right? So, but it is. I mean, it's definitely, this is why, you know, it is safe to have midwives at home, but it is safe to have a home birth. It's because they carry, carry the equipment to help in case of it is a true, you know, emergency. And it can go pretty
rare that it's actually an actual right threat. So I don't think they were that worried either. Then they maybe used it more often than you do now, I think.
Yeah, or just different midwives, different. And this is why I always tell to my clients and everyone listening here, you know, interview your midwife, talk about these things. You know, what is your protocol of bleeding? You know, how often do you use synthetic oxytocin at home? If they go like, oh, yeah, we use it maybe 50% of the times. So I was like, you know, then maybe she's someone who is really quick to act, right? If someone says, oh, yeah, I just use it like literally 10% on, you know, of the time or something. Then we go, oh, wait, it depends on what kind of midwife you want. You know, there's a range of home birth midwives. Some are quite medical, you know, some are very not. So it's a wide range.
And I think that was something I hadn't researched by then, obviously. But luckily, it didn't interfere with our bonding or with a, you know, milk letdown or anything. Everything went so smooth. It was like I had done nothing else but held my daughter and had her. I felt so like she's always been with me.
Are you planning on becoming pregnant this year? Maybe you've already been trying for a while, or you're in the planning stages. Then the Conscious Conception Program might be for you. The Conscious Conception Program is for you who want to truly optimize your health and the future health of your baby. And prepare body, mind, heart, and soul to become the best mother you can be for your spirit baby. The program will be given over 12 weeks with bite-sized video lessons teaching you years of fertility and conception knowledge in an easily digestible way without the overwhelm. Each week you'll be introduced to a new easy practice or lifestyle change that you, together with a conscious conception sisterhood, can implement and finally make into your normal daily routine without the struggle of trying to do all the good things, all at once, and all by yourself. Each week you'll meet with me and the same group of women that will be doing these lifestyle changes and conscious conception preparations together. For 12 weeks, you'll get my undivided attention and expert advice at our live calls as you're introduced to new information and practices to take you closer to conceiving your spirit baby. There's lots that can be done on a physical level in optimizing egg quality and creating a fertile womb soil. But being as this is a conscious conception program, we go so much deeper than that. We dive into the mind, heart, and soul part too. With spiritual practices for fertility and conception, connection with your spirit baby, becoming the mother you want to be for your future child, meditation practices, womb awakening practices, mindfulness practices, and feminine embodiment practices, to name a few. If this program has sparked your curiosity, then head on over to sacredbirthinternational.com or click on the link in the bio to find out more. For this first round, starting on the 2nd of April, I'm offering this program at a heavy discount, only for this first round. So if you're planning to become pregnant this year and really want to optimize your chances, as well as prepare to be the mother you wish to be for your spirit baby, then this is your invitation.
And I know it can be very provoking for people to hear this, like both about my birth and also how the postpartum time was, because I felt like everything was so wonderful. Like I enjoyed every second with her. Really, I did. And I'm not saying this is something everyone feels or that it's wrong to feel something else. I'm just saying that that's what I felt. It doesn't have to be so hard either. It doesn't have to be so challenging. And it's not for everyone, and maybe you won't know what will happen for you, but this is what happened for me. So it was, I didn't even want to go to like baby groups, because, or I did maybe once or twice, but I felt like they were so negative about everything. And I didn't want to be a part of that, because I felt like I love this. I don't mind not sleeping during the night like I used to, because I get to sleep, you know, with her during the day if I need to. And she breastfed next to me at night in bed. I co-slept. So it was easy to just fall back to sleep. I didn't have to get up, you know, to sit up, to find her, to find the breast, to find the right position, blah, blah, blah. She was just next to me. And then we both fell asleep and we were, So it was a really wonderful time having her. And
I was wondering when you were talking about this, first of all, I think it's really important to talk about a positive postpartum experience, because it is a lot of dominance, both of course with births being traumatic or, you know, all of this, and also the postpartum being really hard. And how much do you think you having that experience was down to actually doing the work in pregnancy to, you know, let go of the ego, be in the now, accepting what is, doing your spiritual, mental, emotional work, like transitioning from maiden to mother?
So much. Because I had already kind of given up my old self.
That's it.
And I realized that, you know, I want this human being in my life. I want to change. That's why I want a baby. Or that's why I want to have I want to become a parent, because I want to change with life. I don't want to hold on to my old self. Not because I didn't like that person, but just because I want to grow. I want to, you know, I want to be present for whatever life presents to me. So when I felt tired and people were like, oh my god, do you get any sleep, and oh, you're breastfeeding all the time and you're carrying her too much, and it was like everything was just, you know, people love telling you what to do and what you shouldn't do. And I was just like, yeah, my back is aching and I'm tired, but it doesn't matter. I want to be tired for her. Like I want to be in this. It is hard in, you know, physically it's harder than what you have ever maybe experienced, but I want to do this. So I'm not going to complain, because this is my choice and I want to have this experience with her. I want to breastfeed during the nights. I want her to be super close to me. I don't want to have her, you know, lie in bed and scream. And
that also makes it easier. And this is the thing that our modern society, the way things are usually done with keeping a baby separate in a cot, or maybe even, which I really hope no one does, but some might still do, keep them in a separate room. I mean, that's heartbreaking, but that also makes it harder for the mother. You know, it makes sense to co-sleep safely. It makes sense to breastfeed on demand. It makes sense to be with your baby in your baby's rhythm and not try to make your baby fit into a routine that your mind has made up. Mm. And the women who do this do generally move through the postpartum much more easily.
Yeah.
And then if you resist this and try to put your baby on a schedule or routine or separate yourself from your baby or think your baby should have any kind of schedule, feeding, sleeping, anything, like you just have to move with your baby.
Yeah. Also in my work as a doula and doing as much research as I've done and met so many parents and midwives, and I also understand that, you know, depression, postpartum depression is so much more common if you have that experience where you need to separate yourself from the baby and you're holding on to your old self, you know, and you don't want to lose yourself with a pregnancy or with a new baby, and you want to have your old life, you know, intact, that it becomes so much more hard. I mean, so much harder and a struggle, and, you know, you might suffer more from postpartum depression then. So I think, yeah, and all the hormones that you get and that are like high, you know, all this wonderful oxytocin that's high in both the baby and the mother when you're close, you stay skin to skin and you're like, you know, very focused on the baby's needs all the time. So the baby, you know, doesn't have to scream too much and not get too much gas in the stomach and yeah, and so forth. So, and I think that's like a trust you build between the baby and the mother, right? Like, you know, your baby, and then your baby's answering your, you know, you showing that you're focused and you're responding to the baby's needs, and the baby become more trusting to you as a parent as well. And then when you have established this kind of trust, you don't have to go outside of yourself either to seek for advice as much. So I remember that when I had to go, especially when I moved to Sweden, I had to ask for, you know, or you have to go to this like program that you're enrolled in automatically what is it called? The pediatric
child and family health care.
Yeah. So I never asked for advice. I didn't really listen to what they said because I felt like I know what I'm doing and I know I'm doing this right with me, for me and my baby. And I knew if I would ask for questions or ask questions or ask for advice, that they would tell me something that wasn't really, you know, working for me. And I also told people around me to like, I hear what you think, but that's not for me. You know, don't tell me what to do with my baby. And I had to be really strong with my, you know, and protect my boundaries there.
Yeah.
So I was like, I was in the US where breasts and breastfeeding is super taboo, but I was just like, you know, pulling down my shirt and breastfeeding her everywhere. I didn't care at all what people thought or said. And I think that if you have that attitude, it's also something that you show to the outside world. Like, I'm not inviting your bad recommendations, you know, or your advice or your thoughts on this or whatever. I don't want to hear it. And I'm not, you know, not open for it.
So let's dive on into your second birth now.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. How quickly did you become pregnant again?
Well, it wasn't until 7 years later or 6 years later. We moved back to Sweden and we had a breakup. We moved apart for a year and a half. And then we started going to therapy together and we were kind of struggling to, you know, to find jobs here and stuff like that. So later than I thought, but also, you know, Stella was such a like big, our daughter was such a big person in our lives, and she took, you know, all my space, and I was happy that she did too, but I didn't really know how a sibling would fit into this. But then I learned that it was, you know, for sure, many different souls can fit into your heart and your heart just grows. So it wasn't like, you know, they took space from her maybe necessarily. But anyway, so it was 6 years later that I became pregnant, and I was working full time then as a writer for a company. So I was at an office or in an office every day, all day long. And my body didn't like that at all. And I had like 3 hours of travel time every day.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was from like having a really easy, painful pregnancy. I had a harder pregnancy because I was in pain, you know, my hips and my pelvis was hurting a lot from sitting so much. And I was, had other like itching, and I had, you know, iron deficiency, and it was much harder for me to move with the body and just do what it needed to do and eat what I needed to eat. You know, it was, yeah, so harder to follow the body. And I think that's why I experienced pain, because I couldn't, you know, I couldn't lie down when I needed to, or I couldn't move in a way that I needed to. I had to just sit or stand straight up like this. Yeah. Sometimes I kind of like went into the coffee room and no one else was there and lie down. You know, I printed out papers that I had to edit and lie there and edit papers with my feet up for a little bit, because, you know, you get like swollen feet and everything is hurting anyways. But everything went well during the pregnancy. The contraction started 8 days before the due date. Okay. Stella had come like 4 days before.
And this time around, had you also decided to have a home birth?
Yeah. So I'd already been working as a doula for a little bit. And I had also created kind of not really yet a community, but I knew some midwives already because I'd worked with Birthright Sweden here in Sweden by then. So anyways, so I had picked two midwives that I wanted to assist the birth.
Beautiful. So yeah. Let's dive on into the birth.
Yeah. So it was like kind of the same as the first time, you know, contractions came, they were coming regularly. They were pretty intense, but I was hardly open at all. It was like half a centimeter or something like that again after the whole night. You know, I woke up with contractions during the night. I was waiting until in the afternoon, I think, or if they came at night after. So I've been doing, you know, working with the contractions alone for a long time. And they came and I was still just a centimeter or something open. And they gave me some acupuncture, I think, like, acupuncture and not a needle here and a few in my ears. And just encouraged me to go to bed and try to sleep, which I actually could then for a few hours. But it was still kind of the same thing where I woke up to handle a contraction and then I fell asleep in between. But it did slow down because of the acupuncture, I think. And then I remember midday, sometime after I'd eaten lunch, I went down, I took a bath to see if it was the real thing. So I took a bath and I did some like breast massage on myself or nipple massage to get the oxytocin going even more, for the contractions to become even stronger. And my little test was that if when I came out the contractions had stopped, then it maybe wasn't the real thing yet, because, you know, it's common to just want to tell people seeing this or listening that it's sometimes the contractions can come and go for quite a long time, especially if you're pregnant, you know, your second time or third time. And so anyways, but yeah, they kept coming and we called for the midwives and one of them came first. And when she came, she thought I used too much energy. I was like up and trying to take the contractions or take the waves, like, you know, standing up and squatting and like really diving into them. And I was like super conscious that I wanted to do it, you know, to really like this time not try to stop them or not try to stray away from them, but really like welcome them. But she thought maybe I was using a little bit too much energy. So she asked me to lie down on my side and she started, you know, just caressing me and diving me with her voice, her dark voice, just telling me to get heavy, you know, and just breathe really relaxed and calmly. And I kind of came into like some trance, you know, and fell asleep. I thought when I woke up, I thought I had slept for maybe a few minutes, but I'd slept for an hour there and then. And when I woke up, the contractions became so much more stronger and more intense. And pretty soon after that, I went into the tub. And my mom, I knew I wanted my mom to be with me this time, because, you know, when I was gave birth in San Francisco, she couldn't be there. And my sister was visiting from Norway, taking care of her daughter. And she had just come home with my daughter and lied in the room next door. Anyway, so it started like approaching midnight. And it became stronger and stronger, yet I was still just like 5-6 centimeters open, you know, just like last time. And the midwife thought, this is going to take probably a whole nother night. And I was like, no way, he's coming. I knew he was like, no, this is happening. This is happening. She doesn't know it, but I know. And I asked Josh to get in the pool as the contractions got, you know, stronger and stronger. And I also had to ask my midwife for a hand to dive me even more, because it felt at that time he was like lying, you know, like in a position where he was left instead of right. And I had like horrible pain in my back, in my lower back. It was like killing me. And
so
he was
lying with his back against your back, you mean?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And it was
posterior. Yes.
Yeah. And so I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I might have to just get some kind of relief at some point. But then it was just like 1 second of doubt, and probably when it was as, you know, transition or something like that. And then I felt like he was coming, and my husband had to call for my mom to come. Oh, he had called her actually. So just like she arrived like just 10 minutes before this, I think, and had lied down in the room next door. But now he was like coming down, and I felt how he was rotating. It was tickling inside of me. And it was so amazing, because I felt like also so thankful that I was at home, because I could really move my body with how it felt like he needed to rotate in order to come out the best possible way. I could feel that so strongly. And I started laughing because it was feeling so crazy, you know, having him tickle me inside. And that was also great. You know, everyone started laughing, because at that point too, we had called in everyone. So my daughter, my sister, and my mother were sitting on the couch right next to the pool. And yeah, so I think that kind of also relieved the like tension of like, mom is, you know, for my daughter to hear me, you know, screaming or being in this like mood of like, you know, super vigilant, like hyper-focused mood of birthing him, but it got less tense from laughing and, you know, feeling him rotate inside of me. And then pretty soon after, he just popped out. Like, you know, I didn't even have to push him out. He just like came out like a cannon or something. It was crazy. And I caught him. And I brought him up, and he was screaming right away. He was this like huge person right away, just as he is still. And my daughter took off her clothes and got in the pool with us. And she was the first one to hold his little hands and legs. And we're sitting there, all four of us holding each other. And my mom was there. And my daughter took pictures, or my sister took pictures. So it was an amazing, magical moment. And then, I sat there for maybe again. It takes me a while to birth the placenta. It has taken all three times, has been like around an hour before the placenta comes out. And this time I wasn't bleeding hardly anything. So everything was really, really calm. And Stella, our daughter, got to cut the cord, you know, and hold her brother when I went to the bathroom. And yeah, it was great. It was amazing.
I really love this story about how, you know, it sounds like then this one like 24 hours, or I'm not really following how long.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like, you know, in the beginning you were using a lot of that like active birth stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
Which, you know, I'm not saying this is right or wrong things, because everyone just like, you know, needs to listen to their own inner voice and truth of how to move in labor, right? But maybe potentially it came from the mind, the doula mind, knowing, yes. Ooh, this is good, right? Yeah, yeah. And I think this is a thing for birth workers that, you know, the mind and all the knowledge can sometimes intersect, and maybe also for mamas who are like super researched, can intersect the actual listening inward to the intuition, into the body wisdom, into the baby even.
Yeah,
and I love how your midwife, I think I know her, you know, put you to bed. And because this is the thing, like, and I keep on telling people this, right? you can birth a baby in a coma. Actually, you probably will birth a baby easier in a coma because your mind and all that bullshit gets out of the way, and your body can do what she's designed to do. Like, we can hold babies in for a long time. We can, you know, all this, it's so multi-layered, right? And, but when you then just fully relaxed and dropped, that's when you truly kicked in into active labor, didn't you?
Yes. And people should, I mean, it's great to tell this story because I was only like 3 hours from giving birth when I lied there sleeping. Yeah. And also I dipped my head, you know, this happened all three, during all three births. So I kind of like dipped my head face in the water in between the contractions because I'm so relaxed. So it's possible to be in so much pain or whatever intensity in your body and still be relaxed and still enjoy and be in an ecstatic, you know.
Yeah, because I think the key thing so far in your two births is like the key thing is that you can't force labor. Like, you can't make it happen from will. You can't will it to happen. It's like you have to surrender, and you have to surrender on deep levels within yourself that actually deep relaxation is the key to that, isn't it?
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm curious about your third now. Let's dive on in.
Yes, a third.
So how far between are these two?
Yeah, they're 3 years apart. I wanted, I felt him calling for me. I knew I wanted to have this third baby. Our relationship was not good at that time, but I just wanted to have him. I knew he needed to come. And he was even, his name was even something we had for the first boy. And when he was born, and we were like, no, he's not an Anton, you know, something else. And he became Julius. So we still had Anton left. And if Stella would have been a boy, she would have been named Anton. So he was still like, you know, he was still waiting to come. But I was breastfeeding Julius still and had, because of that, probably difficulties getting pregnant. So I would probably have gotten pregnant earlier if I could. But then when my period started coming again, I became pregnant right away. So it was like he was just waiting for me to to have ovulation or to ovulate. So yeah, it could happen. Anyway, so then I was working as a freelance journalist and I could, again, you know, have a little bit more free time or decide my time more. So I went to dancing for birth classes during pregnancy and also some yoga. So my body felt amazing. I was 38 now, you know, but it was still such an easy pregnancy. My blood sugar was amazing. My iron was fine. All my blood tests were great. My body was feeling great. And even if I still breastfed at night. So before he was born in August, I had kind of like tried to wean my second child from breastfeeding at night. And I just succeeded like a few weeks before the third birth. But he was still breastfeeding during the day. So anyways, but because of my pace of life, then I still could handle it. I could eat what I needed, you know, move the body and stuff, and I wasn't hurting. So it was great. Even before the labor started, I felt for like about a week that my body wanted to go into labor, you know, and once it did, I was only like a day before due date and the other two had come before. So I think it would have started earlier if I felt more relaxed, but since I'm like so in tune with my children, I couldn't really let go. And I had some idea that I wanted the other kids to be present during their, you know, the birth of their brother. We didn't know the gender yet. I remember calling my midwife, and the first midwife was the same one as who was present during the second birth. I called her and I told her that I feel like my body wants to start giving birth, but I can't. Like, I know there is something. And she said, maybe you should ask your mom if she can have the other two. So when I started packing their bags and I knew they were about to go, that's when the contractions started coming. Actually, it was so, you know, symbolic of the situation, right? So my husband drove them off and they started coming like, you know, regularly then. And I was already like having to breathe through them and start, you know, handling them when he came back. But this time, it still took a while for the contractions to come or for it to pick up and become really intense. So we went to bed. I had contractions the whole night. And again, I could kind of sleep in between contractions and wake up to handle them. And then in the morning, we went to a cafe, had like blueberry pie, still taking the contractions. But I felt like, no, this is wrong. I need to get out in nature. And this has been like an urge I've had every time to get out in nature during pre-labor or early labor. It has felt so great. The first time, you know, by the water, the ocean. The second time I went, actually I laid at home, but I looked at the forest outside. That became like my, you know, to focus on and to kind of like to become, to like get into some kind of like meditative mood has been important for me. And in nature is where I find that kind of state of mind. Anyway, so we bought some lunch and went out to a park or to a nature area, Hellasgården this time. And I sat on the rocks and I listened to hypnobirthing in the ears and just sat there like the whole day with the contractions coming and going like waves. I just let them come and let them go. And I was super relaxed. Then went home and they picked up more. I was doing some dancing, like I've learned at Dancing for Birth, and we laughed and we had fun. And I have to share that during every birth, we have had like, we have done lovemaking as well. It's been like super natural for me to do that. And he has given me massage and we've been kissing and, you know, doing whatever comes to mind and be playful, I think, is super important. Anyways, and then our midwives came maybe 11 or something. And then my contractions stopped. You know, it's so typical for me. I'm like, hi, do you want tea? And how are you doing? And then the animal body is like, this is not safe, you know, because my neocortex is too stimulated.
Yeah. And that's the thing especially when you're highly sensitive, like so many women are, like we're so highly in tune with everything around us. Even someone that you know and trust coming into your birth space can slow down your process, sometimes even stop it until then, like maybe they go into another room or you just acclimatize. It might take even an hour or more for you to get back to where you were. And that happens so often.
You know, and this is like the most important thing we need to talk about, I think, because women think it's their bodies that's at fault. You know, it's like they're Verksvaga, what do you say in English? Failure to progress, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, this is like a natural.
It's physiological. Really
good, right?
It's very intelligent. Yes.
So that's how my body worked as well. And they had to go and lie in our kids' room for a little bit, maybe for like an hour or something. And I went in with my husband and just in, you know, went in, lie down in a dark room and just had a quiet. Then they picked up pretty soon after. But we didn't wake them up yet. So we went into the living room where he had prepared the pool. And we were just like kind of kissing and, you know, holding, caressing each other. And then they were like picking up a lot really quickly. and I got in the pool and that's when I'm like, okay, things are happening. Can you get the midwives? So I felt like a strong need to have feminine energy with me in the end, like when I'm actually about to, you know, push the baby out.
Cross the threshold, yeah.
Yes, exactly. To dare to go that last, you know, through the portals of meeting my baby. I really had to have like the portal being like just infused with feminine energy. So they came and I was still not, they thought again that they checked me then, I think, and I was still just like 5-6 centimeters open. So they were like, oh my God, she's in so much pain. This is so intense. And she's only this little, you know, dilated. And I was like, no, But I actually tried sterila kvaddlar. I don't know what that's called. It's like the water they're spraying in with the needles.
Sterile water injections is the word.
Yeah, sterile water injections. And I have no clue why I said yes, why I had like, listen, I had never even thought about the thing. But when they asked me, I was like, okay, try it. Because again, my pain, my back was in so much pain.
Right. Yeah, that can help against back pain for sure. Anyone listening? So sterile water injections, it's simply like a milliliter under the skin. And it's like a wasp.
Yeah.
This thing, it really hurts for like 30
really
seconds.
Yeah.
And then it can actually alleviate the back pain for hours after, but not for everyone.
I think if they knew how close I was to having him, they wouldn't have given it to me.
Yeah.
Because this was like 20 minutes before he came. And it was just taking me off, you know, my focus kind of. I just got angry getting it like, you know, the stung was so intense in itself that I was like kind of being thrown off my.
Totally. Like if you're getting stung by a bee or a wasp, you get freaking angry, don't you?
I know. I got angry and I was like, what is this? And I got kind of disoriented for a little bit.
Yeah.
Luckily, I got to steer back to, I got, you know, I got back to my tracks on my path of having him. And back into the pool. And just like 10 minutes later, I'm like, he's coming and he's coming so fast. And my midwife asked me if I wanted to push on land because we had talked about that. Maybe I wanted to try on land this time. And I was like, no fucking way. I'm staying here. And instead of being on my knees, I leaned back like just automatically. I felt like I needed to. And I know that can like just maybe slow it down for a tiny, tiny bit. Maybe I. And I asked her to catch him because I felt how he was moving through me so fast. And it was also that like ejection reflex. He just flew out of me kind of. Yeah. So he was born, I think it was like 5:30 now in the morning.
And this is the thing, like actually like those injections could have because they hurt like beep and
it could actually have
triggered that fetal ejection reflex because you had a surge of adrenaline from that experience, that pain of the wasp stung you, you know, stinging you like four times or whatever it is. I mean, it's not like pretty
dangerous. You have to get the
yeah
baby.
Because that's what the fetal ejection reflex is. It's like, you know, you have this surge of adrenaline and your baby just shoots out.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah.
So, because then he was so close anyways that I couldn't have just stopped contractions and run like if I was on the fields, right, or in the forest. Then he just needed to come out so I could grab him and then run with him in my arms. So yeah, that's so true. About that before. Yeah, very true. And we gave him the name Anton August Rain because it was like August Rain. On the windows.
Precious. Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. And again, it took like an hour until the placenta wanted to come out. And we're sitting in the water. We brought him down back to the water and just had him like float in the water and looked at him. And he had such a, you know, like strong, present gaze into our eyes. Where we felt like, oh my God, here he is, the boy we have been waiting for. Like he had just been there always, really, also. And then the siblings came, you know, the midwives did everything, weighing and after that, and checking his length and his everything, checked so everything was okay. And then the siblings came a few hours later. And that was something I wouldn't have done again because it was a little too early. The third time I thought the after contractions were really intense and more painful. But it was also sweet that they got to be a part of it. And, you know, his brother never, ever became jealous of his brother. Yeah. Actually, from that day, he was just always so loving and still is to his brother. And I want to add that I think it's because I was still breastfeeding him, even though he felt gigantic next to the little baby. I didn't push him away. He got to be like in my sphere. He also started waking up at night when he got woken up by his brother, seeing him breastfeeding. He was like, why does he get, but not me? So after all the months of trying to, you know, get him off breastfeeding during the night, he was now again, like wanting to breastfeed at night. So after a few months, I became too exhausted and I felt like this is not like, now I'm going crazy. But then it was more like a natural thing. I was kind of like, just became this like lion mom who was just like, nope, you can't have it at night, not at night. And then he just quit by himself, actually. I didn't have to do any, you know,
meeting
or whatever. Mm. So he breastfed for like 3.5 years. But that first time I think was super, super precious and important for him to feel like he was as important as his brother.
Yeah.
For him too. And they are like twins today. They're like twin souls. Aww. They always think about each other. Always show so much love to each other. Of course they can fight like other kids do too, but they always, you know, apologize and tell each other how much they love each other and stuff like that.
That's so sweet. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Wow.
Quite a difference, you know, a different time in being postpartum, in the postpartum period in Sweden, because we don't have, culturally, we don't have this like natural support system as I had in San Francisco. We had friends and family come with, you know, whole meals, ready-made meals for us and fruit, and they came and massaged me, and you know, it was such an amazing time after having Stella. But here we were pretty lonely, and my husband started working really early and I was alone with the babies, and it was more challenging for sure. Mm-hmm. And I was always like hungry. I felt like I was depleted of nutrition from breastfeeding and giving birth, not getting enough support. And I didn't feel like I had time to make sure I had that for myself in a way. And I didn't prepare enough. So I just want to give that to the listeners, that it's super important to
make sure you have
that support system around you.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask that now, and maybe you want to elaborate. So if you had a first-time mom in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience and maybe also a nourishing postpartum, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
I think there are three things that I would say. The first is to really take time to listen in words. And it's only in stillness that you will hear what your body has to say and your baby has to say. And try not to listen to what other people do or say and want you to do. So that's the first thing, because then you know what you need for you and what the baby needs. And then the second is to not be afraid of the fears. You know, that we don't need to give birth without fears. Because fears is like a natural part of us as humans. You know, if you're fearing your fears, I think it's harder to actually look at your fears and take them seriously as well. You know, because your fears kind of guides you to what you need to do for yourself. So like, try to be as open as possible and really dare to look the fears in the eyes, kind of. You know, and when you do, they kind of lose their, you know, their strength of you or their hold of you. They're kind of dissolving once you start looking at them, because then you also start dealing what you need to deal with and what your fears are. If they're like, maybe it has to do with that you have been a victim of sexual abuse, maybe you have to start going to therapy during pregnancy.
Yes.
Maybe you have to, you know, let everyone know around, or really, really pick your people, like who you feel super, super trust in, and be careful. You know, you're going to become more careful with who you let into your space during pregnancy and birth then, if I think. So, and also, yeah, if you still have fears, that's totally natural and normal. And I think, you know, we're going through such a huge transformation as human beings when we're pregnant and we're about to give birth. And, you know, we have to, like we talked about in the beginning, we have to be able to let go of our old self and our ego in order to really meet our new, you know, self as the mother of your child. And in order to be open for that, I think it's okay to, like, you know, to just be accepting of what is, like, this is a new time, try to be curious about it as well, like what it has to offer you. And then the third thing is my little friend here on my shoulder is here to remind me, it's a snake.
Yeah.
And it's going into the, you know, going towards the moon, the half moon circle, and it's shedding layers. Mm-hmm. And it's, I did this tattoo to remind me and other people that, you know, challenges can be transformed into lessons and, you know, teaching you what you need to do, or teach you about, like, what you need for yourself if you're open to it, you know. Yeah. Open to what kind of lessons there are in this kind of transformation in life, if it's during pregnancy and birth, or if it's like I've just gone through a divorce, if it's a divorce. It's hard, it's challenging, it's scary as hell. You don't know what's coming, but just try to trust that if you're open and curious, that it's actually going to be, you know, transcending into something new and amazing in your life.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your wisdom and your birth stories with us. Been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for letting me. It's so great to think about my birth stories, and I'm really, really happy to be able to share them.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it, leave a review, or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.